Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show. I'm Michael.
And I'm Patty.
This episode is episode 88, which is very, very lucky. As two eights, this could be our luckiest episode ever.
Looking forward to all the exciting information we're going to share today.
If you haven't listened to the Michael and Patty Show before, we cover over 41 years combined of nothing but 7-day-a-week, 24-hour-a-day experience about buying and selling real estate in Prince Edward Island. We don't promote ourselves, we just promote the island. And we just don't cover real estate, we cover everything PEI. We put the real in real estate. Do you like the new motto I thought up some morning while drinking a coffee?
Yes, I do.
Let's get into it. Today, it's raining. Yesterday, it was raining. The day before, it was raining. It's soggy. We have overcasts. We're doing this recording right on the Charlottetown waterfront. Tide is high. And I couldn't help but think that the phones will be pretty quiet today, as will the emails and the texts, because we have, in real estate, what are referred to as fair weather shoppers. You know all about that?
Yes, I do.
So what's going to happen on a day like this? People are not typically going to be shopping for real estate when, in fact, heavy rains and bad weather may be the best time to see properties. And why is that, Patty?
There are many reasons or things that you're able to look for
in a home. Give me the top 50.
The top 50, leaky basements. You could look for gutters, making sure they're properly draining away from a property. I wouldn't recommend this during an initial viewing. However, if there is leaks, you would be able to see them in attics.
A really bad leak, you'd be able to see in the drywall and the ceiling.
No, absolutely. If because of the humidity level, it would make it far more pronounced, humid or mildewy basements. The dampness would be exacerbated in the basement for sure. That may not be as pronounced or prominent during a hot summer dry day where the windows have been allowed to air everything out. Again, that's another, people would be keeping their windows closed. So whatever smells are contained within the home, they'd be much stronger on a poor weather day. What items do you have?
Well, the point to this whole comment or ideal was go out, look at properties when it is pouring down rain. Yes, you may not be able to get a great view of the outside, depending on how much rain there is, but what you are going to see is how watertight that house is that you're potentially going to be buying. So things to look for, obviously, if I walk into the basement and this has happened to me in the dark, where I put my foot on the floor and the water comes up to my knee, that's a pretty good sign that you have a wet basement, wouldn't you say?
Yes, and as a result of that experience, I think if you are a realtor listening, Michael always recommends that you carry an extra pair of socks and possibly pants in your vehicle.
Shoes and a flashlight. If I would have had a flashlight that day, I wouldn't have gone up to my knee in water. Other things we look at is grading, draining. I mean, if there's a pond in the backyard, that's typically not a good sign, especially if there's a septic field there. If you're weeping field is there and you've got a pond, specifically one that's discolored. Yuck.
Not good.
Not a good sign. Leaky roof and attic, we've discussed. Gutter and downspout failures. Additionally, if you're looking at a house and the downspouts protrude 20, 30 feet away from the house, you know, chances are they have a wet basement and they just didn't add that as a luxury item. What else are we going to see in the basement? We had this a few weeks ago in a duplex. We went into the basement and something was running absolutely nonstop and had a battery backup.
The sump pump. The sump pump, again, the reason this particular home, and I think we discussed this on a previous episode. However, the drainage of the external systems, which would be your gutter, the grading away from the property, was not set up properly. So therefore, the water was just being spat out by the sump pump, reabsorbed by the foundation, and the cycle continued. So the sump pump,
but
overworking.
But they had the sump pump in the 30 foot hose from the sump pump and the battery back up there because they had major water issues.
There was a hose that offered the opportunity to have the sump pump drain 30 feet away, but that was disconnected, unfortunately, and they weren't aware of it, which, again, make sure your systems, everything is working outside. But you're absolutely right. Sometimes when you see a 30-foot extension away from the home, it's probably indicative that they have had problems and these are the precautions or measures they've taken.
And other things to look for is leaky windows, particularly if they happen to have a ladder in front of the house and one of the occupants is climbing up the on the roof to get the leaves out of the gutter because they're overfilling and draining along the side of the house into the bedroom. That's usually a sign that you have to remove those and replace those windows. And I'm speaking from reality here because we've seen this the last couple of days.
Yes. And that's another thing. Has the home been maintained? If the gutters are not working, it's not just about the drainage away, but is there any drainage at all? Are they all blocked with pine needles and leaves and years worth of composting foliage?
2 days ago, we saw a house with hardwood floors. Could be soft wood or any wood for that matter. And what do you see typically around the sliding doors that would indicate that you may have water infiltration?
Usually the discoloration, the wood either is starting to separate from being wet and then drying and wet and drying, or it has a black kind of tone or tinge to the wood.
So the door is either leaking or they've left it open in the rain. In some cases, and I remember going into one house many years ago, the sliding door was left open in the winter and they had about a 6-foot snowbank in their living room.
That's not good.
No, needless to say, that property manager was not rehired. I think they were cleaning the place and they left the sliding door open in the winter. Yard saturation and ponding, we talked about flooring anomalies. Sump pump activity, exterior water management. You know, look at the draining. How is the water? How is the yard being sloped towards the house or away from the house to get rid of the water or make it worse? I've noticed some houses, they'll build them too low. And I saw this in one particular subdivision, whereas every time it had a heavy rain, there was basically a pond around the entire house because the lot had, it was low at the front and they built the house there and they should have really raised it 2 or 3, 4 feet, which is actually what they did with the house next door when they built it. Mildew and musty spells, we've covered. That's it. That subject to death.
I actually have one more.
We can't add anything else.
I have one more recommendation. Again, if you're a buyer and you want to get into this property and it's a heavy rain day, now, hopefully most times people are honest, it just doesn't work with their schedule. But sometimes you could also take that as a little bit of a red flag. Why don't they want you into the home during this really terrible Mother Nature day? My recommendation and suggestion to you is if you can't physically get inside the home, that shouldn't prevent you from at least driving by the home during a bad weather day and just seeing how these external systems look like they're working and functioning.
Because one thing people will do that's not very honest is they'll disconnect the hoses from the house when it's not raining and when there's showings, right?
Yes. It's the same with having a dehumidifier running and then disconnecting it during showings and wheeling it into the closet so that people aren't aware that the basement might be pretty humid and musty.
So is that the reason you go through all the closets in the basement to see if they're hiding dehumidifiers? And if there's 4 or 5 of them, you know this is probably a bad sign?
It's not the main reason I go through closets and cabinets is for storage to see how much space there is, how the space is being utilized to give the buyer client perhaps some ideas. This is a great storage area for these items or look at how much space is in here. But that's an absolutely good point. Is there 6 dehumidifiers hidden away inside of them all?
I was in a house once years ago. I don't want to get into telling a lot of stories, but the water infiltration in this house was so severe that they probably had 4 or 5 dehumidifiers. And if they turned those dehumidifiers off, within hours, the walls would turn black with mold. You ever seen that before?
No, that's terrible.
So they had to dig all around this entire house and fix that issue. Let's talk about 13 things to never have in your home when selling. I'll let you cover the first 13.
Clutter. Open floor space and clear surfaces. It, again, gives the impression that the home is spacious, the current owners haven't outgrown it, and that you have many years of enjoyment ahead of you. And it allows them to easily maneuver and enjoy the experience of viewing your home. Personal items, keep your decor neutral, use soft neutral colors, don't have a bunch of little trinkets, and if you can, you've already made the decision that you're moving, start packing away some of those family photos and just keep things very simplistic. Fix broken, loose, or damaged things. Floors should be, they should be clean. Get photos out, which I've already mentioned. Remove pet odors and mess and scratches. Pet odors and smoke are the number two, are the two top repellents or bad experiences that buyers say will actually cause them or prevent them from moving forward with purchasing a property. It just doesn't give a good sense, smelling being one of your five senses. No artificial scents, repair door, faucets, excess furniture. Remove the excess furniture. Again, if they can't maneuver or walk through the property, it feels makes the rooms feel smaller, and that just will work against you and may impact how much you actually, how much equity you're able to get from that property. Political and religious items, remove them.
Do I just a side question? I have a Make America Great Again ball cap collection. Should I put that away?
I have no comment. Make your beds. It should be the first task of your day anyways, but it just shows pride just by that simple task of having your beds made. Remove junk piles, trash inside and out. Don't have 50 pizza boxes stacked up because you think it's cool about how many you're going to collect. Your recycling, it's an easy drive if you've missed your recycle day. Don't have bags and bags. We've seen houses where their garages are completely filled with recycle bags. If you don't have a vehicle or are able to, get somebody to help you. Again, remove junk and clutter and use neutral light paint colors. So these are things to never have in your home when selling, which would be strong colors. It would be the opposite.
Like blacks and really harsh reds.
I know it's hard to move out of your home prior to actually knowing when you're moving out of your home, but the one item that you will get 100% return for is paint. So we do highly recommend, if you are able to, tone down some of those colors.
What's the three cheapest and most effective things you can do to a house to make it more sellable? Clean, declutter, and paint.
Yes, absolutely.
Not, and we've had clients do this before. We had a little waterfront chalet listed years ago, and they thought to sell the house, they'd put granite countertops in the kitchen, which was totally wrong in this chalet because everything was basically wood and pine. It was very cottagey feeling. And then they had this granite countertop, which most people that bought that structure wouldn't want. They would have been much better off painting, cleaning, and decluttering. The only things I would add to this list is remove any ashtrays if you're a smoker. We've discussed this in past episodes. And anything to do with pets, cats and dogs. Patty and I are both animal lovers, both have volunteered at the Humane Society. But when it comes to selling a house, everyone wants that hypoallergenic house that doesn't have dogs and cats.
Yeah, so tuck away those dog bowls, cat trays. It's kind of hard if you have a kitty litter box and a little one at home kind of roaming around. But do your best to just hide those items if you can.
On to another subject. We both get emails and phone calls with people that say, well, my house hasn't sold. And in some cases, they'll blame it on other agents or they'll blame it on some historical data that's on the internet. This particular listing reached out to one of us and said, well, my house hasn't sold because there's an old listing from 20 years ago that says it sold. And this is what people are finding when they're searching my house. I didn't say anything. I mean, there is what there is on the internet, and there's not much we can do about changing historical data that Google markets or advertises when you do a search on an address. But when you look at this property, and I didn't tell the owner this because I do not represent her, I look at the listing, and here we are in June, and she's got pictures from January when the house was listed. There's an old trailer in the yard. The garbage cans are out front. The grass is brown, muddy, wet. It looks like they photographed it on a cloudy day. Pictures inside, in addition to the outside pictures, are some of the worst I've ever seen. Unlevel. They've got a picture of a large dog in the house, speaking of the last subject, more than once. Cute dog. Probably don't want him in the pictures. Utility trailer filled with garbage in the driveway. Vertical pictures. Don't use them. They don't syndicate to all the real estate sites. Patty?
Yeah, and you just spoke to a photographer, somebody in the last week, I recall you mentioning.
Oh, the guy that called us old.
Yes, yeah.
So we have photographers and videographers reaching out to us once in a while. So this particular gentleman, which I always love to help these people establish their business and do great things, but all of his video and all of his photos were vertical because his focus was on Instagram and TikTok and whatever he used, Facebook vertical videos. Well, none of those we use. So I basically said, like, do you have any horizontal video? Which that's what we're using on YouTube and MLS and marketing materials, Facebook ads and everything else. So he says, oh, you mean the old style?
Yeah, I found that quite entertaining to assume not understanding how our MLS system actually is set up and works.
The way the MLS system works is it syndicates with other websites, and other websites may not take vertical pictures, so don't use them. And then to top it all off, we've got 2,000 characters available for description. What does the agent do? Cuts and pastes a description from a property from 35 years ago, and there's nothing in this description that makes me want to buy this place. I'll just read the first sentence. I'm not going to read the whole description. Country living amongst cottages and four-season homes. Boy, does that just scream, I want to buy it today.
Yeah, sometimes. Well, the first thing because I've not seen this, the first thing that comes to my mind is, are there farms around me?
You already know where the house is. You're looking at the address. The map is on realtor.ca. And then the second line is just a short drive from, and they say the city name. Well, I know it's just a short drive because I'm standing on the property and I can see the city I just drove by, and it was a short drive.
Yes.
And it's a unique bungalow. And it goes on and on and on. There's nothing in this description that sets it apart that shares emotion, lifestyle, or anything unique about this property.
Or let's say if a person is sitting in Quebec, Ontario, Alberta, BC, Saskatchewan, and they're trying to get an idea or a feel for this place, it doesn't really capture, they haven't created what kind of lifestyle can I expect to have? Should I purchase that particular house?
They mention one room is almost completely finished.
Okay.
Why? Why are you telling me something's not done and what do I need to do? Why don't they just finish the friggin' room and update the description?
Yes, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you.
No, that's it. There's two or three more. I don't know if you want to mention them. Overpriced. Well, that was the point of this. I wrote this weeks and weeks ago. The problem is you're overpriced. Your marketing sucks. Your pictures are crap. Your description is lousy. Plus, on top of it all, you've reduced the commission. That's going to make it real attractive to agents that are showing properties to see you've reduced the commission in addition to everything else. Why hasn't it sold? Has nothing to do with the history on the Google. It has to do with everything.
So our recommendation and advice to you is if you're a seller and you're wondering why isn't my home selling? Take a look at the marketing representation of your property and look at it through, you know, an objective eye, not yourself personally, that it's exciting to see your living room on the internet and the for sale sign, get past some of those, the initial excitement and anticipation, and really dive into the property. You know, and your agent, you've had the conversation about pricing. Pricing in this market, and like we're saying, today it's June 2025, you need to be pricing your properties properly. You can't be sitting there saying, well, I can always go down, but I can't go, you know, back up. So I'm going to start this high, because you're selling everyone else's property. Your marketing material, it is so important, and it also will cause the buyer to bypass your property and look at something that's got a better representation of the product being offered. So it's something that as a seller, you do have the right, you should be working as a team with your agent to make sure that these items are taken care of. I always send off my listings to my seller to make sure all the details are correct, that there wasn't a data entry error or something that we had missed, chit-chatting while we're signing paperwork and filling out the forms. I always make sure that I ask them to do a quick inspection or, you know, reconcile the information, the data out there. I don't usually have to ask them about photos because I do hire a professional photographer who does a phenomenal job. So I'm not too worried about that, and I'm confident in my overviews, but please be mindful of these items if you are a seller.
Propane tanks. I had a house I sold. Actually, it was a cottage, and 6 months after the sale, the propane company called us and said, we want our tank back. What can we say about propane tanks?
So propane tanks, we cannot own them.
Legally,
the large ones. We can have the small ones for your barbecue and that, but legally, we are not allowed to have the large propane tanks that are used to heat your home or run your propane stove or oven. These items are leased. We have a variety of different companies that provide propane gas to our homes that do utilize that. And they're not very expensive. Each tank, you're looking at about $120 a year for them.
I looked at 90. Has it gone up?
Different companies. I'd rather quote a little bit high than a little too low and say that the Michael and Patty show that said this is all I should be expecting to pay.
$100 plus or minus.
Sounds good. So as a buyer, it is your responsibility to contact, and if you don't want to go with the current propane supplier, contact your propane company that you would choose to go with. Most are pretty good with saying, okay, that's great. We will make arrangements to flip out the propane tank, give the previous supplier their tank back and set up ours so that you have your lease. Most people will end up just going with whichever propane tank company is already in place. You set up your own lease and you start from closing date onward. It is the seller's responsibility prior to closing and usually within a week to top up that propane
tank. If that's in the contract.
If it's in the contract, it is by default within our contract. It is the fuel adjustment clause. So unless it has been either striked out or written in, whether it's within the initial contract or an amendment or some form going forward, it, by default, the fuel adjustment clause is already in our contract agreement. So seller tops it up, they pay out whatever the amount is to top up the propane, and the same goes with oil, but we're talking about propane here, and then the buyer pays for a full tank of propane from them. So that's typically how that is done. You've got tanks are leased. Make sure the tank is removed or the lease is assumed by the new owner and fuel adjustments have been made.
Everything, bottom line, should be documented in the purchase and sale agreement. And in this particular case where the propane tank was left behind, somebody didn't dot their I's and cross their T's because this should have been taken care of prior to conveyance or ownership.
And I will tell one quick little example. I am aware of, it's not one of my clients, but I am aware of a situation where a buyer wasn't on island. They were purchasing, it was probably going to be a year-round home, but they hadn't arrived yet for the property to move in. The propane company was trying to get a hold of them. and unfortunately was not able to. They obviously did not set up a lease or contact the propane company. By the time they arrived on the island to move in, the propane tank was gone and they weren't too pleased. So it is your responsibility as a buyer to make sure these services are in place. Hopefully you have a great agent that will kind of give you little reminders and make these recommendations, things like your electricity, your fuel provider. These are things that are your responsibility. If not, you will show up and propane company will just remove their tank. New wetland identification tools.
You've received the emails from the provincial government, which incidentally, if you're not on the mailing list for the various newsletters that the provincial government offers, you really should be. There's tourism lists. There's one list that gives you everything, including road foreclosures and what's happening in the province. And this particular topic is an extract from that.
Yeah. So I'll just read what you have just to keep it simple. Energy, Environment, Energy, and Climate Action, the EECA.
ECA. The ECA.
Nice. Have developed new identification resources for the public regarding unmapped wetlands and probable development restrictions. Specifically, we're hoping to increase the public's knowledge to help identify the potential of unmapped wetlands on their property.
Why is this important specifically for developers or even people buying a single-family home? Because they know what part of the property they can develop, either whether they're doing a subdivision or maybe they just want to put a shed out in the backyard or a swimming pool or whatever. They know that there may be certain areas that they're not allowed to develop.
Or not able to develop, and they're assuming they're buying a piece of land because I find there's more land being, there's an interest this year again. It kind of slowed for about a year or so land purchases, and I do find that is starting to pick up again. So just because there's a piece of land and it's all green, if you're not physically able, especially to walk the property, there are tools available to you. And we highly recommend that you utilize them. I just sent off a whole package yesterday to a gentleman. His family is looking to purchase land. And I just filled that email filled with links because they're free. It's not that your realtor has to pay for access like GeoLink or anything to give the power within my client's hands to do some of their due diligence and research. I'll make sure they have the properties and the parcel ID number because some of them you do need that.
Actually, what you can do is you can refer all your clients to my website. And if they click on links, all the mapping links are there, as well as the ability to set up a search and a bunch of other stuff.
Yes, I also have, it's called Linktree, and that's on my Instagram and my Facebook page. That also has a lot of these links all available to you.
Air quality. I thought of this when I was washing my truck there a few weeks ago. And I thought to myself, when I lived in southern Ontario, in an industrialized city, I would wash my car and the next day it would be covered with this black soot. Do you remember those days living in Ontario?
Yes.
Did you ever wash your car back then?
No.
Well, then you probably didn't notice. But it brought me to think that you can wash your car in PEI and 2 or 3 days later is still clean, with the exception of this time of the year, just with pollen because allergies.
It's pretty high this year.
But when you Google it, it actually says that Prince Edward Island has some of the best air quality. Minimal industry, lots of ocean breezes, low traffic, no major cities, practically breathes like a spa.
Nice. I like that.
And then they mention Newfoundland and Labrador, clean Atlantic winds, sparse population, low industrial emissions. Nova Scotia, strong coastal air currents help. Although Halifax brings a slight population spike.
Okay.
In other words, if you want a clean car, don't go anywhere near Halifax.
Okay.
But they do mention, and I just said this, allergies to pollen. I really didn't have any allergies when I didn't live here, and now I do. And I'm finding this year, and I know you and a number of other people are experiencing a lot of allergies because of the high, presumably, pollen content. So it's something to keep in mind.
Yes, if it is something that you deal with, allergies, just know they may be a little irritated or by moving to the Maritimes, but I absolutely love the breathing like a spa experience.
I received an email with some questions about some raw land there, and I'll give you this question. Do conservation easements exist in PEI? This is our trivia question today.
Conservation easements. I would say yes.
You would say yes, but they're under different names, and one of them was this one we just discussed, which is the wetlands. So in PEI, according to my search, we have Natural Areas Protection Act, NAPA. This is the gold standard for permanent land protection in PEI, and then we've got Wildlife Conservation Act, WCA. For those seeking more flexibility, the WCA allows for conservation agreements that can be tailored to specific needs and can be time-limited. So these are things you can check out. That would be like those properties you see, and they'll tell you that we just replanted the trees and we have an agreement with this government agency or whatever, and you can't cut the trees for 30 years or 20 years. Like, you've seen that before, I'm sure.
Yes, there's programs like that, Ducks Unlimited. There are properties that have, you know, protective ponds where they will come in every couple years to make sure they don't want you to touch the pond or the water table there. They keep it clean to promote wildlife growth, life, existence.
I had a question from all places, Ecuador. He was looking at raw land and building lots, and his question was, can I do anything I want with this building lot? I think he wanted to start up sort of like a hobbyist nuclear reactor plant or something.
Well, that's concerning. Okay.
Can he do anything he wants with land or lots?
Depends where the
no.
land is.
No, you can't.
Well,
no. There's no land anywhere I know of in Canada that you can do anything you want where you end up destroying the environmental surrounding, or maybe you're going to do an industrial application, you're going to open up a scrapyard and start burying vehicles with fuel and oil in them. There's always going to be some limitations. There'll be less limitations, speaking specifically of Prince Edward Island, when you're buying raw acreage that doesn't have any restrictive or protective covenants. But regardless of what you're buying, talk to your agent, talk to the government, talk to your lawyer, make sure that what you're planning on doing, especially if it's something as bizarre as a nuclear power plant, that you can actually get building permits and authorization to do that.
I agree 100%. I've just never been, even the thought of someone wanting to put in, not that this guy probably did, you're just being funny, wanting to do that. But yes, when you think of extremes like that, the question would, or the answer
would be,
well,
wouldn't
even
be extremes. Let's say I want to put a mini home on my lot.
It depends on where the property is, and is it within a municipality? Even if it doesn't have zoning, is it something that...
Restrictive and protective covenants, bylaws and laws.
Correct.
Is what you need to check with. What if I wanted the next 35 years of firewood on my front lawn? Same rules apply.
Yes, absolutely.
Abandoned vehicles, yes or no?
Again, it...
Giant bonfire that's 50 feet high.
Check with government officials.
There's another new mapping utility out. When you just thought you had enough mapping, there's one more they've just added.
The new online resources helps drivers plan for the road construction season. So it is a PEI mapping utility.
A mapping utility that tells you if there's road construction.
I like that. I haven't seen that.
If you go to my website and click on links at the top right, it's right there, and be sure to join the newsletter.
Okay.
Can share it with all your friends and clients.
I think I'm already subscribed to your newsletter. I do get them, so I am.
But I would hope so.
I will check that one out if you've already been ahead of the rest of us and have that available. I'll make sure to add that to my Linktree list.
And when you think you've heard absolutely everything, there is a piece of acreage that's sold, which kind of ties in with our Ecuador friend. He buys this piece of acreage, and this is an expensive piece of property into the seven digits, I believe, or close to it, plus or minus. And his family, or I guess his father or something, was a real estate developer. So he basically had a conversation with the agent, and he said, "Oh, this is not going to be any problem to develop, is it?" The agent said, "Oh, no, no problem at all. You can do whatever you want with this property." Closes on it to find out what, Patty? You heard this story too?
No, I don't know this story, that he obviously couldn't do what he intended to.
He wanted to develop a subdivision there, and he thought he could, and the agent told him it'd be no problem, because the agent basically made himself look like the resident land expert, only to find out after he closed it and was out $1 million plus or minus that the community it's in said, "No, we don't want that developed."
Not good.
Not good, unless you like to spend time in court and legal fees, because that's what they're doing now, and they could potentially be doing this for years. And hopefully that agent has his errors and omissions insurance paid up, because it's probably going to turn into a lawsuit there too. Do not make promises, specifically if you're an agent or a broker, as to the viability or the ability to develop a property, because you don't have the authorization to put a stamp on that.
No, we do not. And I defer. And
I defer everyone to you. See if Patty says you can do it.
No, I do defer. I feel, and if you're an agent listening to this, it's great if you want to look like you're providing a service and I'm going to make all these phone calls for you, but you're then taking on full responsibility. You may not have asked the right question. Your client may have not have shared exactly what they were intending to use the property or do. So it's just best that you get the buyer client to do their due diligence. The province knows the different angles to come at the prospective developer or somebody that wants to develop the land just for themselves. They'll know what to ask. Set them up. Give them the resources, let them do their own due diligence. Don't try looking like a superhero agent, and I'm going to do all this homework for you, because you could put yourself into a not a good situation.
What was a simple solution for this? The simple solution would have been write the purchase and sale, and I've done this many times, subject to them receiving whatever authorizations, permits, and approvals they require for whatever they want to do. Wouldn't that have made more sense?
100%.
One line, that's all it takes.
Yep. I agree.
But they were so freaking excited about this property, they couldn't close soon enough to get a great spot to put a picnic table.
Not good.
Trivia question. Speaking of these agents that are high service, there was a high service agent that sold a building lot, and the buyer of the building lot said to the agent, "Well, I want to do X, Y, and Z with this. Can you help me with the building permit?" The agent said yes. He made the application for the building permit. Building permit was approved. Everything was great and wonderful. He got a 5-star rating on his realtor.ca page, only to find out 2 years later that the government said, "I'm sorry, this building permit is invalid because we made a mistake." He ended up suing the agent and the broker and winning. What should have been done in that situation is what? And that's the trivia question.
He shouldn't have filled out the application. He should have went through his lawyer.
Exactly. So the moral of this story is his lawyer should have made the application, or he, the purchaser, should have made the application, not leaving the legal onus or responsibility on the agent trying to provide high services, only to find out, and this has happened a number of times on the island, where the government will just say, "Sorry, made a mistake."
And I've experienced that as well. And it does.
Were you trying to be a high service agent filling out all the forms?
No, I didn't. It was a piece of land that had, and it was an engineer's survey that was all approved, and the government, and it wasn't very old. The survey would have been about 9 years old. By the time my client, they made the decision not to develop it after all, they were trying to sell the property to have a very savvy buyer do their due diligence, and the province declined their building permit application to develop the property. And my clients, the sellers, went to the province and said, "We have, this property is allowed to be developed." They said they found one cattail on the property, so they were shutting down. They said this property is now non
An environmental disaster.
Yeah. And we're talking 4.5 acres. This isn't just a 1 acre lot. It was 4.5 acres. Cost them, that buyer, about 2.5 years in court, only to have the province approve a very specific 10,000 square foot area on the property for development because of their initial approval. It was a very stressful situation. We did get the property sold years later, but unnecessary. So even if you do have a survey or something like this from the government, that if it's more than a couple years old.
Well, the survey wouldn't be from the government. Typically, the survey would be from the vendor that a survey company produced, and then the government would have stamped it based on conditions spelt out, which are typically, most surveyors will actually put that right on the survey as well. But there would have been a letter from the provincial government telling them what they needed for the approvals as well, which is probably something you want to get a copy of. You want to get a copy of everything.
Yes, I agree.
And in PEI, where do you go for all this information?
Access PEI.
What's the best time to call them?
During the day?
8 a.m.
Yeah, first thing in
the
morning.
Show up at their office at 8 a.m.
Yes. Yeah. No, for sure. Or there's the development office, development planning office, which is in Charlottetown, and also a great resource. They're very helpful and would be far more happy to answer your questions preemptively instead of being in the middle of a messy situation. So do your homework.
Here's an interesting stat. Do you ever look at podcasts and YouTube channels that have a massive amount of listeners and viewers, but very few subscribers?
No, go ahead.
You don't look at the
No, I don't look at the stats.
If you look at the stats of some of these podcasts that have 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 listeners, or I shouldn't say listeners, I should say people listening to episodes, it's really rare for them to actually follow or subscribe to that show and give a star rating or feedback. So everybody should try that with our podcast. Let's wrap it up.
All right. Thanks again for listening to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS.
And what's the new motto? Putting the real in real estate?
Yes. Yes. And if you're a first-time listener, this is about what you can expect if you go back and listen to the previous 80-some-odd episodes. There's lots of, we have a lot of fun, lots of jam-packed information. We try our best to keep topics moving along so we don't spend too much time on them, and hopefully we don't bore our listeners. But we appreciate each and every one of you for tuning in, listening to our crazy little stories. All intended to help protect you through the buying and selling experience, as well as everything PEI.
And if you want any information about Prince Edward Island or have any questions or concerns or PEI real estate, shoot Patty or I a message. Have a great day. Be sure to follow, subscribe, rate us 5 stars, give us some feedback, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Have a great day. Thanks for listening.